Basketball is where we'll begin with our next installment of Stroman on Sports, joined on the phone by Dr. Debbie Stroman, the host of Cover 2, and If You Only Do, right here on WCHL, joining us now on the phone. Debbie, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing well. I like the winter chill that seems to be here, and we got the sprinkle of nice weather as well. So it's the best time of the year, right before winter starts, what, Saturday?
Saturday, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. So Tar Heel basketball has got that kind of chill in the air as well, unfortunately. Women's still doing really well, but they're coming off that loss to Alabama. They're looking to get back on the winning track. Tar Heel men, I was looking at some of the statistics for December. They haven't lost five games in a row since 2002, I think, and they haven't lost five games in December since 1950. And if we lose tomorrow to UCLA, we'll have ended both of those streaks all at once. So Tar Heel men's basketball really reeling. How do we get off of that?
Well, it is a difficult time for Tar Heel, the Tar Heel Nation. As I mentioned last week, I still don't think it's time for panic. But what is happening is because Roy Williams, the Tar Heels are not used to losing. And so when you lose one game, or even two in a row, it's like the entire season is over. And we have to be mindful that the expectations are so, so high that when you don't win, you know, basically every game, or, you know, run off streaks of 10, 12 games, it seems like, you know, the whole world is falling apart. And when we consider the injuries, we consider that we did lose a lot from last year's team, that it's okay to have an average team or a team that will work its way through these challenges over the next month or two.
I think Art Chansky had a sports notebook to that effect earlier this week, that just how great a program UNC is, that the team's above 500. We've already beaten close to a top 10 team in Oregon, got a really cool win over Notre Dame to start the season, put up a really good fight against Gonzaga, which is one of the best teams in the country. All of that in the first 11 games of the season, and the only reaction that everyone has is, oh, what has happened to North Carolina basketball? Like, that's the level of program that we're at. That's really cool.
It is, but it also speaks to how much the ACC is a basketball conference,
mm-hmm.
because people turn off football too early in Chapel Hill, in Raleigh, and I would say even in Durham. And so when all your hope and expectations are for basketball, just to start off really strong, and you're already calculating whether or not you can afford going to the Final Four, you know, you're getting all your gear because you know you're going to get an ACC championship. Well, the football season is not over, and men's basketball is not winning big. In fact, they're struggling. And so I think that puts people in a place of, wow, what am I going to do? Well, I'll just complain and gripe and whine and second-guess Roy Williams. That's what I'll do.
That's often the first go-to, right?
But there are some things that are notable that we will pay attention to. We're not saying that it's going to be easy to turn this around and compete for the ACC championship. But certainly when UNC men's basketball has been built off of rebounding, solid defense, inside out first, as in you throw the ball into the post players and then you look for outside shots. And when you look at the numbers, the shooting percentage, in particular from the three-point line, it is less than par. And rebounding still doing a good job there. But you just have to put a big red circle around what do you do with the point guard position.
Mm-hmm.
When you have so much, you know, invested in a Cole Anthony, and we just don't have top caliber to replace him. So what do you do with your offense?
Excited about Jeremiah Francis, the performance he put up against Gonzaga the other night?
Well, I think when you have someone who played minimal minutes the game before and in the beginning of the season, and then you get the opportunity to go against one of the best teams in the country, and all eyes are on you. Not that I'm saying that he's not a talented player. Every player who plays for UNC Chapel Hill is talented, but I really think he might have played above his head, so to speak, as in he was excited. I'm going to show how really good I am, but now you have to come back to earth and realize that you might be the starting point guard, and you need to make sure the right people get the ball at the right time. You might not be asked to score, you know, to look for as many shots. So I'm hopeful that he'll continue to play at this level, but I'm managing my expectations.
Speaking with Dr. Debbie Strowman, again, host of If You Only Knew and Cover 2 right here on WCHL. Right now, talking Tar Heel basketball, but we're not going to get a chance to talk again between now and the time UNC football takes the field in the Military Bowl against Temple a week from now. So let's turn to Tar Heel football and ACC football in general. I know bowl season's already starting up, and you mentioned kind of ACC fans looking ahead to basketball season already, but a lot of big bowl games coming up for ACC teams. And of course, the biggest of all is once again Clemson in the Final Four, just like they have been every year for, what is it, the last 4 or 5 years now? It's been a long streak.
Yes, they are certainly representing the league well. And I know people are happy in the conference about the money that Clemson brings to the ACC. They might not get to the Final Four in basketball. They might not, you know, win field hockey championships and soccer and all of that. But what they are good at is bringing in dollars, because the ACC divides the money equally. And so Clemson has a hashtag called All In, and I've had the opportunity to witness it in action. I've been very blessed to take students to the national championship every year, and getting to know Coach Sweeney, his staff, and the players. They've created a really unique community in Clemson where it is not just a football team. It is faculty, it's staff, it's the local townspeople. Everybody believes in this program, with no exception. I think about what we struggle with at Chapel Hill, and oftentimes, and it can be public, where the faculty is challenging what the football program is doing. Students will challenge. We have fussing around whether or not we should be allowed to park on campus during game days. It's just a different atmosphere at Clemson, and I think that helps to support their success. Not sure whether or not, you know, I go back and forth as to whether or not it's good to have one team that dominates. I think Tiger did a great job lifting up golf with his dominating play. Floyd Mayweather in boxing, Michael Phelps with swimming, but others would argue that maybe we need a great opponent to lift everybody up. So the Ali versus Frazier, Magic versus Bird. But right now, there is nobody in the ACC that is touching Clemson football.
I was thinking about this earlier as we were getting ready for this conversation. You brought up that question. And I, every time I hear that argument about a dynasty, and any time there's a dynasty, you get that question, oh, are they... Is it making the league worse by their dominance? On the one hand, that argument makes a lot of intuitive sense. And on the other hand, and tell me if you can think of one, I can't really think of an instance where you had a league in any sport where there was a dominant player or a dominant team that just won, where the league or the sport didn't end up way more popular and way more prominent by the time the dynasty came to an end. You think about the Yankees in baseball for the 30s and the 40s and 50s, the Celtics in basketball, the Bulls in basketball in the 90s, UCLA in college basketball. You mentioned Tiger Woods already. All of those sports and all of those leagues had way more viewers at the end than they did at the beginning. And I don't know if there's a counterexample, but that is what I keep coming back to every time this argument comes up.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I think when your team is a rival of that great team, mm-hmm. and you're getting slaughtered and losing, well, then you might feel otherwise. But
yeah, I say this as someone who don't like the Yankees. I wouldn't have liked the Celtics in the 50s and 60s. I certainly wouldn't have liked UCLA. Like, I hate dynasties, but they do increase viewership.
It's that hate or love them. And
yes.
So it draws more attention, which means more marketing and advertising, which means more money being spent and more ways to convince us to turn on the TV or to actually go to the competition, go to the game. And so I think that's really the secret of the commercialization of how we've gone from, you know, sport being something on the side to having a sport report during, you know, the news. The New York Times, you know, it has a sports, you know, division. You think about major big business, everything from Bank of America, Wells Fargo, to J.P. Morgan, to Google. Everybody has a sports division because you want to capture all of these fans, all of these consumers, and sport becomes that front porch. And so however you can get them, whether they're upset or whether they're happy and celebrating, you want to get your products in front of the audience.
And we'll leave it there. Catch Dr. Debbie Strowman on WCHL every week, cover two during football season. If you only knew the rest of the year, you can get the full archive on our website, chapelboro.com. Debbie, thank you so much, as always. Happy holidays.
Happy holiday season. Thank you.